WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. As many of you know, for some time now, we at The Common have been talking about the lack of accountability for harmful behavior from local chefs and restaurateurs. And last month, WBUR City Space continued that conversation with a panel discussion called A Reckoning in Restaurants, Combating Toxic Restaurant Culture.
What really disturbed me when the Barbara Lynch story came out was not what it said, because we already knew about a lot of that. It was the response from readers who said, this is just how restaurants are. If you didn't like it, you could just leave.
That was panelist Irene Lee of May May Dumplings. The panel also included James Beard Award-nominated writer Hannah Selinger. During the event, audience members submitted questions for the panelists, and there were so many that there just wasn't enough time to answer them all. So we at The Common figured we'd kind of continue the event here on the show. So we asked Irene and Hannah to join us to answer some of the questions they couldn't get to that night. I first asked Hannah a question about blackballing in the restaurant industry. Is it really happening in Boston?
Well, I have proof of it happening in restaurants, and I don't think that Boston is any different from any other restaurant scene. I was blacklisted myself in New York in 2007. If you know anything about labor laws, you know that it's absolutely illegal for an employer to divulge any information about why you were let go from a position. And my employers did not keep to their end of the bargain, making it impossible for me to get further employment. This happens all the time, routinely in restaurants. So there are good reasons for people who are employed in at-will states like the state of Massachusetts, which is an at-will state, or the state of New York, where I worked before this, to sort of bow their heads and do things that are under the radar and to kind of keep working in conditions that are uncomfortable or that are abusive because they don't want to upset people and they don't want to upset the status quo.
How about you, Irene?
This question about proof is really tough, right? Because a lot of things are true that will never be proven to the satisfaction of people who want proof. I don't know that we're going to find a written blacklist anywhere, but people know each other, people talk, and this is a small town. And so people consider relationships to be very important. On top of that, I think it's less about whether blacklisting is a real thing and more about the fear of it. It doesn't have to be real to be perceived as a real threat. And even if, you know, maybe a chef might say to a worker, I'll make sure you never work in this town again. And even if they wouldn't do that, how is that worker supposed to receive that kind of threat? And so I think, again, it's less about what do we prove and how do we appreciate the power dynamic in the situation.
Mm-hmm. All right, my next question that I have here. Irene, what role has the pandemic played in the fact that we are sitting here having this conversation?
I think the pandemic's been huge. Number one, it's put a lot of power in the hands of workers who, for a short period of time, we did deem essential. Mm-hmm. And when their basic needs were not being met, they organized, whether that is forming a union, signing a petition, making collective demands. We saw it happen in companies big and small. A lot of workers left the industry and probably are not going to come back. And so that has put the skilled labor of our industry in very high demand, which then mm-hmm. continues to place negotiating power in the hands of workers. I also think that, unfortunately, in a lot of situations, the pandemic showed workers that they were seen by their employers as expendable.
Yeah, yeah.
That appropriate measures to keep them safe were not taken. I think for a lot of workers, you know, I don't know, like when things are good, it's easy for us to all get along, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the going gets tough, you start to learn where you really stand and how much you're really valued.
Yep.
And I think in some cases, people found out that they really were valued and that made them happy to be in and stay in those workplaces. And in other situations, people realized that their employer seemed not to care if they lived or died. Another thing I'll say is part of why hiring is so tough in our industry is because a lot of frontline workers died during the pandemic. And so if we complain that nobody wants to work, we also have to look a little bit at ourselves and how we have shaped this labor force and incentivized them to leave, to find different jobs, or if we have harmed them to the point that they're not coming back to work.
So, Hannah, given the historical lack of accountability regarding harmful behavior in the workplace, would you still encourage current workers to share their experiences?
I'm never going to tell people not to share their experiences. Obviously, I was able to share my own experiences about having worked for David Chang from a position of privilege and relative safety. And I will say that as a caveat. When I decided to go forward with my story, there was nothing that he could take away from me. And I felt that by coming forward, I made a pathway for other people to kind of, I felt like I was coming forward for more than just myself. That being said, I feel that anybody who feels like they are safe to come forward should come forward if they're comfortable doing so. Do I feel like anything is going to change all at once? No, of course not. And sometimes I also feel frustrated that my own story, even given the publicity that it got and the support that it got, didn't do more. That's a point of frustration for me. But I still feel like every small story, every honest account helps chip away at the larger problems that we have in the industry.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So with these stories, the goal seems to be trying to get some accountability going. We have a question here that asks, what does accountability look like? And when does one get to come back? I guess, when does one get to redeem themselves, I should say.
I had postulated in my essay that accountability, at least in the example of David Chang, looked like him giving up the business to somebody else. Obviously, that has not yet come to fruition. I still have a daydream that he gives the business away and steps aside. When do these people get to come back? These people don't ever get to come back. I mean, forget it. They're done. They move on. New generations of people who have not destroyed the psyches of young people in restaurants get to take over and they get to start.
Yeah, there's plenty of chefs in the world, I guess, huh? There's plenty of people out there cooking good food who are nice people. So I'm going to ask this next question. Do we need an anonymous spreadsheet of toxic chefs and their restaurants so Boston diners can vote for their values with their money? Or is there another way?
I think there are lots of ways. And I think we have to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, to be totally honest. I don't think there's one way to have accountability, to move things forward. And, you know, just to provide a reflection from my last couple of months, a lot of people felt like I posted the video about Ming because I was so offended by the roofie comment. And it was offensive. And also, I've heard
worse things than that. And I don't think he needs to go to jail or anything. Yeah. But I wanted to see, you know, I wanted to conduct an experiment in storytelling for accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think so many of us don't actually ever get to see true accountability. And so it requires these kind of methods of experimentation and these different ways of sharing information. I think that for me, I do want there to be a little bit more relationality in how we have these conversations. But again, I think we have to try whatever we can, because we are in an era where, like, I don't know, we're still new at this accountability. Like, mm-hmm. we're not good at it. And so I think it's about experimentation for me personally.
Another audience question here. It goes, instead of dwelling on vague stories of the past, what are the clear and realistic steps we can take now to empower workers moving forward?
I love this question because I do think ultimately it comes down to moving forward. We are probably never going to have mm-hmm. accountability and healing for everyone our industry has harmed. And so we need to be looking forward as much as we're looking back. I think for me, it has to do with us as a culture learning to value restaurant workers and learning to value food. When we pay more for food, that allows restaurant operators and workers to take better care of themselves and each other, to have better training, to invest more resources, including things like what Hassel does with Not 9 to 5, and for us to professionalize restaurant workers and to give them the respect that they deserve. There's no reason that the people who make your food should have less rights and less empowerment than the person who does your taxes or mows your lawn. Like, restaurants have been this kind of weird parallel universe employment-wise for so long. And I think that can't be the case anymore.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about the power structure in restaurants. And I think, you know, restaurants need an overhaul. Workers in restaurants need to be working shorter hours. They need to have a wage increase. There needs to be an overhaul to the way the actual internal structure of a restaurant works so that it's a more communal workspace where everyone is treated the same way. It's not one guy above the next, so that, you know, there's sort of like a kicking strata where, you know, one guy can kind of yell at the guy underneath him and he can yell at the guy underneath him, because that sort of creates this hostile work environment. I think there's so much room for improvement in terms of the way restaurants are created and the way we create the persona of the chef, even going back into culinary school, which sets people up for failure right from the very beginning. And I think if we start there, and we pay people better, and we level the playing field, we're bound to sort of create a better system from the very beginning.
Thank you both so very much. Irene, as always, it's a pleasure. Hannah, thank you so much for coming through to The Common. Please come back. We really appreciate you both taking the time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Looking forward to continuing the conversation.
That's Irene Lee of May May Dumplings and James Beard Award-nominated writer Hannah Selinger. To watch the full video of the City Space event where these questions came from, check out our WBUR City Space on YouTube. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Let us know what you think about accountability in our restaurant scene. You know, is this something that you're taking really seriously, or you don't really worry about it too much? You just want to go out and eat. Hit us up on Instagram. Let us know what you're thinking at WBUR The Common. You can also send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.